Let's go now. A little life out here.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the UK Packers podcast. As usual, I'm your host. That's Diddy NFL on Twitter. And of course, follow the group at UK Packers. I'm very excited. And this is going to be I'm Irish, right? So I have no emotions. We all know this, right? Sigmund Freud said you can psychoanalyze anybody but the Irish. We all know that to be true, right? I mean, I'm living inside my own head every day. It's troubling. But this is going to be one full of not too much schmoozing, but a large portion of schmoozing because I'll stop here. I'm just going to say I have the man legend himself on, Peter Jones at the IT Hedgehog. It's a few underscores in there as well. Peter Jones! What's going on, buddy?
I'm doing good, Stephen. How are you?
Are you, Peter? Are you really Peter? Because I'm not going to lie, right? I don't use Facebook Messenger all that much because we all know Peter and I, not together, but Peter, now that I think about it, maybe together, would go off into a log cabin in the forest and just not talk to anybody. And Facebook Messenger is just an additional portion of people clawing at you. But I logged on to Facebook Messenger because that's how, you know, you and I get down. And I've seen some pretty dodgy end times of you logging off 3-4 o'clock in the morning, Peter. I mean, talk to us, buddy. How are you holding up?
I'm holding up pretty well now, Stephen. It's a labor of love, you know.
I want to get into it. This is about, you'll see it from the title, people, right? This is the Draft Guide 2024 is almost here. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Pete. This is the sixth version, the sixth guide that you've released through UK Packers. The last year, to give people an example, it was 307 pages long. And what it is, and not to spoil it for people, is literally a Packer, and I'll stress this, right? Packer-centric draft guide. The best thing about it is the quality that goes into this thing. This is where the schmooziness is coming in, right? So pucker up. The quality that goes into it, Peter, is just mind-blowing, right? But the other thing is that it's free as well, which is just doesn't make any sense to me, right? My ears are bleeding. I just can't understand my eyes, which is incredible. But it's 307 pages long, and it is a work of art, and I cannot... Because, look, we've been doing the Packers stuff for a very long time. Now, UK Packers has been going for 11 years. There are times where you're looking down the barrel of doing something and it can be very difficult, right, to get up in the morning. So this draft guide for you, Peter, and we've talked about this in the past and I've probably banged on a lot now, but it takes you an incredible amount of effort. Obviously, you can, like, it's so loved by all of the Packers community. But, Peter, it takes 18 months to do it, which you're not, like, people aren't sort of hearing that incorrectly. You're not you've already started, right, on next year's draft guide?
Absolutely, yeah.
Let's just pull it back, right? Because now we have this conversation every year, but every year I'm excited about it. Every year I'm flabbergasted by it, right? Because I just feel like your draft guides are getting better and better, if that's even possible, right? Because I can't wait to receive this new one and all that kind of stuff. But why, Peter? Why do you do a draft guide? And did you ever think that it would develop into this 300 plus page behemoth that it is now?
So to take the second question first, I didn't think it would develop into this, but I'm a little bit of a perfectionist, as you know.
And smidge.
Each year, you know, you look back on the previous one and you think, well, this could have been slightly better, this could have been slightly changed, etc., etc. So we keep, you know, doing that. But really, it's just my love. Obviously, it's our joint love of football, but I've always been interested in the draft, you know, going back to the early 1980s. Mm. And, you know, I've always kept reams of information about the draft and the players that are going to be drafted. So in essence, it's a lot of information and stuff that I would be gathering for myself anyway.
Yeah.
All right. So this really formalizes that, and you know, and I guess the reason for doing it is you know, it hopefully it breeds some, you know, discussion amongst you know UK Packers fans and Packers fans worldwide who read it, and there'll be some that agree with the things in there, and there'll be some that vehemently disagree, and that's, you know, and that's absolutely fine, and that's the whole point of something like this. But yeah, you know, it's just to keep people's interest and that kind of thing. And I just thoroughly enjoy it.
Look, it's incredible, right? But I find that it's good. It's easy to enjoy something, I find, when you're very good at it, right? And you're too modest, right? But let's just call it as it is here. You are an expert when it comes to all things draft. You have this methodology of compiling players. For instance, in your draft guide, you have the big board, which is the top 350 players. And then in your draft extra stuff at the end of your guide, you've next year's draft watch list. And that goes from 1 to 200. Well, it certainly didn't last year's guide. God knows what you've done with this year's guide. But you have a lot of experience, Pete, don't you? And a lot of pedigree there. And from watching the draft yourself, from watching college ball, like obviously obsessively, right? But don't you have a history with Red Cochran, who was a scout for the Packers back in the day? Does that impact you at all? I mean, when you look back on those times and the people that you knew, because he's not the only guy you knew around the Packers building, but can you give us a flavor, Pete, of like, where did you get your extra insight that brings your knowledge a little bit further? Is it Red Cochran and the boys, or how did that go?
Yeah, I mean, I think the time that I spent with Red, and you're right, you know, Red was probably what I would call my best friend in football. Mm. And you're right, Red was a scout with the Packers from the mid-70s through to 2003. But previous to that, he'd been, you know, the offensive backfield coach with the Packers during Lombardi's time. So, you know, a more knowledgeable person about the Packers and about football, you know, you couldn't wish to meet. And as nice a person as you could ever wish to meet. And I spent a lot of time with Red. I was going to say talking football. Him talking and me listening, right?
It's the way it should have been when you're dealing with Red Cochran. It's how I feel with you, Peter, when you're talking about draft stuff. I'm going to sit here and you just take it away.
And me making notes, and I've still got, you know, a notebook of stuff, just stories and anecdotes and stuff. And, you know, and he would document plays for me. We talked about, you know, the very famous Packers sweep and you know, he would talk about that. And but yeah, just I guess just listening, Steve, and just you know, hearing about the way that he went about looking at players and scouting players and all of that stuff has stayed with me. And I guess, as well as the knowledge, I don't know, it just kind of accentuated my love of the college draft and how it all works. And yeah, you know, it's
fascinating, Pete, to be able to see behind it, right? Because, you know, from being around the business, you know yourself, there's little nuances sometimes that you get told and you're like, okay, well, people don't know that. You know, that's the way that works. Yeah. For instance, one thing that I'll just pluck from the top of my head is replays. So when you go to Lambeau or you're watching it on TV and Dez dropped it, right? And they're replaying that and all this. So, you know, there's a guy in Lambeau, Craig Shieldbauer, and he runs the replays and he has sort of a war room, you know, full of screens and replays and different angles and stuff like that. There's certain almost legislation or rules, NFL rules around what you can and cannot replay, when you can replay them, how often you can replay them. And he would know all of those rules inside out. So when that, you know, thing happened with Dez dropped it, he was in control of being able to a certain extent, replay that on the screen and slow it down to give the coaches for the Packers time to look at it and maybe challenge it. And, you know, when I saw that, I was like, oh, Jesus, you just don't know sometimes the behind the scenes stuff like that. You're like, oh, why didn't they just do, you know, and the game becomes very simple, almost too simple. But then the more you know, sometimes the more complex and hogtied you are with your opinions, because you're like, oh, well, I kind of know that's not the way it works as well. What one little bit like that did you take? Now, you've obviously got a notebook or refill pads full of the advice, but can you give us anything like that around the draft or scouting process that, you know, you feel people out there get wrong all the time? I know one of them that you'd always say was like, when they go to the combine, it's not as if they're looking at it with a blank sheet of paper and going, oh, Jesus, he's fast, and then writes in with the top of the list. They're only confirming what they already know. What else kind of stuff was like that, Pete, that would give people, do you think, a little bit of insight with the draft stuff? I'm putting you on the spot now, if you can think about it.
That's fine. But I mean, I think that combine thing is a great place to start. Mm. You know, we saw Xavier Worthy run a 4.21 in the 40 at the combine this year, which was the fastest ever 40 run at the combine, you know, fantastic. But you know, that was a guy that I expected to run fast.
Yeah.
So, and whilst he probably ran a little bit faster than you expected, it's I've already, you know, marked him up because of his speed. What I'm not going to do is mark him up largely again.
Yeah.
You know, you don't double dip that when you've already baked that in. So you're absolutely right about the combine. And very much, and we've had this discussion before, it's very much about trying to confirm what you think you already know. You know, so is speed that you think you're seeing on the field, does that really translate?
Mm.
And vice versa. You know, if somebody runs a great 40 at the combine, is that really what you saw on the field? You know, I guess that one of the other things, and this becomes, I guess is kind of obvious. I think that when you start getting into looking at players and individual players and what they do on individual plays, clearly it's to stop yourself following the play and following the ball.
Yeah.
Right? 'Cause that's the obvious thing to do as somebody watching a game and that kind of thing as a fan, if you like. But you know, very often you want to see, well, what did the left tackle do on this play, even though the play might have been, you know, a pass down the right sideline.
Mm.
I want to see what the left tackle's doing on this play. So I want to go back and look at that guy. And very often with lots of players, but particularly offensive linemen, and I think offensive line is one of the hardest position groups to kind of assess. I think one of the things that you're always looking for there is from the waist down. What do they look like from the waist down? Do they bend their knees? Do they set a solid anchor in pass rush? So looking at, you know, like I say, looking from the waist down, which is not a kind of natural thing to do, but it works a lot, and it works a lot at lots of positions as well.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, that's a good place to start, right? So with your draft guide, you've got your big board, you've introduction articles, you've draft picks, schedules, you've explainers on how to use it. But ultimately what the draft guide boils down to, and I mean, boiling down is just, I don't even know how you put this thing together and how you rank these players, because, you know, how you rank a quarterback versus an offensive lineman and be able to put them on the board and see where we get the value. But this is a mammoth task, Pete, and I've got two questions for you, and I know you could probably talk for about 45 minutes on each one. I guess the first off is how much college tape do you have to watch? And I was a saxophone player, right? Loved playing jazz. The minute I went and formalized it and started doing my grades, hated it, right? Loved saxophone, then hated it when I had to do it. So I wonder, is there an element there for you? So how much college ball do you watch? And then also, when you're grading, you've said before in the past that if at all possible, you will completely avoid anybody else's draft grades. Any, all of the draft nicks, all the experts, you do not go near their draft guides. You will completely independently do it on your own. Is that difficult to do, Pete? I mean, do you ever have doubts when you put someone down there to sort of go, oh, I have him in at number 54? And you're not sort of tempted to go, I'll just dip onto ESPN and see where he sits. So number one, Pete, how much game tape? And do you ever speak to your wife at all? And number two is that, you know, how do you put these players in order and not get distracted or pulled in a different direction by somebody else?
Yeah, great, great, great questions. So the amount of game tapes that I've watched is, I couldn't put a figure on it, but what I did start to do, and I don't have it in front of me, I started to make a note of every game that I'd watched this year.
Yeah.
This season, and the list got huge and huge and huge, and that was just like through the first half of the season. So it's a heck of a lot, and using, you know, lots of the resources that we have, whether that was previously through, you know, BT Sports as it was, that used to have college football here in the UK, it's now on Sky, whether that's YouTube, whether that's whatever, you know, social media platforms, etc., that are out there. So a heck of a lot. Is it tempting? I just do my utmost to avoid what. Now, you can't completely avoid it. And, you know, if you watch let's say NFL Total Access that's talking about the draft.
Yeah.
Now, clearly they're going to talk about some of their views on players and that kind of thing, which is absolutely fine. What it doesn't do, it doesn't tempt me to start changing my board or anything like that. I have a, how could I describe this? A formula which gives me quite a good basis for getting players into a reasonable order.
Mm.
And then, you know, it kind of groups the top players and the next players and so on and so forth. And then it kind of works. It kind of works from there.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, you absolutely, you can't avoid all of the stuff that's out there. And clearly, those people that are on a NFL Network or ESPN, they have a lot more resources than we do.
And they've staffed, Pete. They've like 14 staff saying, "Here, get us the profiles on those boys. Pull up that bit of game tape. You're doing it all on your own. It's just bonkers."
But you know, it's about doing as much as you can. And I think at the end of the day, when it comes to, you know, putting the final 350 in order, I want to feel like I'm comfortable with that order.
We stop there, Pete? And like, I mean, how much, like, because look, you're a perfectionist. We know this, right? Your draft guide is insane. So you put your 350 players down. The deadline for this that, you know, you've set is April 11th. Are you looking at that on April 10th and going, "Oh, I don't know about that"? And you're thinking about moving them. Like, how do you stop yourself from just rearranging players? Or is your formula so good that you're like, "No, I'm happy. I'm happy with it"?
With extreme difficulty. And yeah. I think what makes that even harder is, you know, the pro days. So the workouts and things that the players are still doing at their schools are still ongoing.
Mm.
You know, and one of the guys that we really like potentially for the Packers this year, Cooper DeJean, has been injured.
Yeah.
Was injured towards the end of the season and has missed all of the workouts. He's not doing his workout until this coming week. So it could be quite difficult not to keep on going and keep on going. But generally speaking, you know, at this point, like you said, we've been going 18 months. Some of these guys have been in college for 4 or even 5 seasons.
Yeah.
You know, if we're not happy with our 350 at this point, then we're never going to be. so, you know, we can continue to tinker until the last minute. But I think that, yeah, it's barring, you know, some major piece of news, then it's set at this point.
And can we talk about injuries, Pete, right? In two different ways, I guess, right? So you're looking at these players, they've had illustrious careers or not, or they start to bubble up in their final year, which I'd love to pick your brain on. I mean, how you sort of quantify where a player's going to go if they were mediocre, and then all of a sudden, whether it's under a certain scheme or whether it all starts to click for them, and then in their final year, they just absolutely go gangbusters, right? But you're looking at a player for 3-4 years, and then he gets injured last minute. So there's two things, I guess, that I have for you on that. Is number one, where does that injured player go, like Cooper DeJean? Like, where does he go? Does he drop wildly because of that injury? Will he ever come back to full strength? I guess my first question is how do you quantify where he goes and why? And the other one there, sort of linked to that, Pete, is there's a player that comes in ultimately to replace this dude. Now, obviously, it might not necessarily always be a guy from the bench, but do you find guys that actually get the chance to start in college, be after one of their teammates gets injured, it's very hard. Is it hard to place them on the big board because you're like, this guy was a non-factor. He was an undrafted free agent, let's say. He's after getting his chance. He's took it. He's rolled with it. And now he is probably going in the draft. How do you juggle those two aspects?
Yeah, so the injury side, the medical side, is really very difficult. And that's probably the one area, could have added this to your previous questions, but this is probably the one area where you are reliant to a degree on what the media is saying.
Yeah.
Right. Because that's the only place you're going to get a feeling of how severe an injury and that type of thing is. As to how that impacts a player's positioning on the board, again, you touched on it. It's when did the injury happen? How severe is the injury? Does the guy have a history of injuries? So for me, one of the best quarterbacks in this draft is Michael Penix Jr.
Hmm.
Right. But he has in each of his first 4 college seasons, he had a season-ending injury. Now he's played 2 seasons since he had those injuries. But that has to be a concern because you know it's going to be a concern to NFL teams.
Yeah.
Right. And to a degree, you're guessing how much of a concern that's going to be to NFL teams, but it will be a concern. And so that guy's come down the board a little bit. I still think he's a potential first round pick. I think lots of people may not agree. I think he is. But certainly that's impacted his draft position. The same with my favorite player in this draft, not necessarily the best player, but my favorite player in this draft, Peyton Wilson, linebacker. Again, another guy that's got a history of injuries, but his play on the field is outstanding. So it really is a case of just trying to weigh up those two things, and to a degree trying to, certainly in terms of when we talk about where they may be drafted, you're trying to guess a little bit how NFL teams are gonna react to that.
Yeah.
But again, he's a couple of years removed from those injuries, and you know, and a really nice player who, being a linebacker, could be a fit for the Packers. So, I think more than anything else, to summarize your short question with a really long answer,
which is rare because it's usually the opposite way around, but go on.
there has to be a certain amount of guesswork going on with regard to the, you know, the medical piece. The second part of your question about the players that come in for them, very often those players will be on my board.
Yeah.
Right. So the board doesn't stop at the 350 that's in the draft guide. For example, I was looking this morning at the next year's, the 2025, and there's like 1,350 players on that list already.
Oh my God.
So, you know, that's clearly not all starters. That includes backups and you know, rotational players as well.
Yeah.
So those guys are already on the board. I think you also asked about, how do you look at somebody that's had, you know, maybe one great season?
Exactly, yeah. More so coming into the draft, you know. I suppose the opposite way as well, Pete, right? Someone who you look at and you go, Jesus, he's a flyer. And then his final year dips. Because we saw that with Jordan Love, right? Where he struggled with interceptions and people were like, ah, he's not an NFL starter. Yeah, I'm fascinated to see how you handle those aspects.
Yeah, so the Jordan Love one for me was, I'm not going to say was easy, but it was relatively easy because for me, the guy had all the traits that you're looking for in a pro quarterback.
Yeah.
Right. So whilst his production, if you like, or his effectiveness on the field in his last college season wasn't quite as good as the previous seasons, there were factors for that, but it still didn't affect the way he could throw the football.
Yeah.
It still didn't affect his footwork. It still didn't affect the decisions that he made. So for me, it wasn't that big a factor. You know, turning it around the other way, there's like a good example this year is Brian Thomas Jr., a wide receiver out of LSU.
Yeah.
Solid receiver in his couple of years before this year. Complete breakout season this season. Mm. And, you know, when you look at him, you say all of the traits are there, right, that you would want in a wide receiver, speed, in particular speed in his case, good hands, etc. All the stuff that you look for. And so for me with Brian Thomas Jr., it's not does he have the ability, it's whether can he reproduce it in multiple years.
Yeah.
Right. So, and that's why in the group of wide receivers, he sits fourth rather than higher than, I think he's fourth or fifth on my list of wide receivers rather than higher than that. But it's, you know, again, it's a little bit of you're trying to, I don't know whether guess is the right word, it's probably the most appropriate. We're trying to guess, can he translate the one great year that he's had into multiple years?
Yeah. Educated guess, if you will, Pete.
Yeah.
But look, okay. And this is the thing, right? And what strikes me is, and again, I'm hitting you with the dual questions here, right? Because I'm like an excited puppy when it comes to something like this, because it cannot be understated, Pete, that this guide is 307 pages long. Because you know what I say, right? I had a guy, Chris Westlick, people will remember him from NFL Network. Brilliant guy. I had him on the podcast. I was very complimentary to him. I couldn't believe that a guy of his sort of stature and reach and all that was coming on the UK Packers podcast. Delighted. And I told him that on the podcast, on air, it was recorded. And I schmoozed him off it as well. Amazing. I was very grateful for him to come on. And one of the comments I got was kind of like, oh, well, Jesus Christ, could you kiss this guy's ass anymore, right? And I'm kind of thinking to myself, No, right? And we all know what happened to Chris Westlake, right? And the thing is, you have to tell people how important it is at the time. I'm a firm believer in it, particularly as an Irish man. So this guy, Pete, is mind-blowing. And I think we're so lucky to have you. The Packers community, forget about UK, I mean, over the whole globe, your draft guide has got very, very successful. It's long awaited. People can't believe that it's free. But it's 307 pages long. This thing is an absolute novel. But the thing is the brilliant thing about this guide, apart from all the other swoony bits, is that it's Packers-centric, so it's very focused on what the Packers are doing. And then also, you do your big board, and there's probably punters out there, Pete, that are generational talents, right? Generational talent punter, unbelievable, right? Punt returner, the best. But the thing is, obviously, when you're doing your 350, you have to be able to put those 350 down in a way that sort of is congruent with, what we expect. For instance, the best quarterback in the draft is likely going to go in the first five picks, let's say. So, how do you compare a quarterback with a linebacker? And is it difficult for you if you lean in and you think, defense is probably better, this quarterback's a bit shaky, and you think this linebacker is probably the best player all around at any position in the draft, but still at the top of your draft board, you need to put a quarterback. How do you weigh up that, Pete? And do you believe truly that the quarterback would be the best player in the draft? Or are you ever tempted to go, you know what, linebacker, boom, he's my favourite player. He should be number one.
I think that, what you do when you grade, certainly what I do when I grade players, I grade them within their positions. Right, that's the place to start. And that's kind of the easiest way to start, I guess, because you can look at quarterback A, quarterback B, quarterback C. Who do I like best out of those three for these particular reasons, and then I pull in quarterback D, and so on and so forth, and you can build them up like that. And then I try to look at it as though if I were a general manager for a team, a brand new team that had no players, who would be the first player that I would take in the draft. So if I've got, as you say, if I've got a linebacker and quarterback that I think are pretty roughly the same at their position set, they're both a 9 out of 10 at their position set, I'm going to go down the quarterback route. A, because they're a lot more difficult to get, and B, because there are a lot more linebackers around than there are quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And I guess C is their influence on the team over a period of time. I look at premium positions first, but that doesn't mean that it's always premium positions near the top of the draft. But you're looking at quarterback, you're looking at offensive tackle, you're looking at edge rusher, and you're looking at corner. And draft history, says, the top 10, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the top 10 positions in each draft, are nearly always those guys.
Yeah.
And that's because those are the guys that have most influence on a game or on a team year in, year out.
Yeah.
But it's really difficult, particularly when you get into, say there was a quarterback, the top quarterback in the draft wasn't quite of that level. How do you then compare that top quarterback with your top linebacker or your top edge guy or whatever? It's difficult. There's no easy way about it. But I think the way you look at it is, if you think you've got two players of equal position and one of them's at one of those premium positions, those premium positions are going first.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's a whole science to it. But look, this is the draft guide in itself, as I said, 307 pages. And it's got articles in it. It's got your big board in it. But a large chunk of it is obviously going into, say, the quarterback position and then listing the top quarterbacks and ranking them in order. So you kind of get a twofer, threefer, fourfer with this draft guide. One, you get all the positions ranked all jumbled together, as you say, based on their sort of value to the team and all that jazz. Then you go into the quarterbacks and you kind of list them from one to, depending on how many are coming into the draft. And that's probably difficult in itself. But I want to step aside from the obvious, and this is way above my pay grade, way above my natural talent, to be able to go in and look at the game tape. And it's just phenomenal. The work that you do is phenomenal. But how difficult is it, Peter, to, because I've heard so many love songs, right? I've written a couple of songs myself. And to try tell someone you love them and to try write, have you ever tried to write a birthday card or a Christmas card or a Valentine's card or whatever to the missus? And you want to express to her just how amazing she is. And when you go and do that, you're like, I feel like I'm saying the same stuff here. I feel like I could just Google what makes a woman or a man amazing. And, you know, it's the same tropes that come out. You're writing profiles, Pete, and you're writing the top, whatever, what is it, 10 to 15 of each position. Do you ever find yourself writing a profile for the 700th time and go, this sounds exactly like, you know, how do you get across? Do you have a thesaurus where you try to come up with different words for different people?
Well, you know, I've thought about doing that, and I probably should have. And you're absolutely right. And sometimes I found that the easiest way to do it is not to write whole position groups at a time.
Yeah.
Because you're absolutely right. By the time you're writing about, you know, the 11th offensive tackle, and you start to write it, and you know, And when I say write it, what I'm usually doing with each of these is taking a whole bunch of notes and condensing them down. So if we take, for example, the top quarterback in this draft, I have pages and pages and pages and pages of notes.
Yeah.
Right. And you end up almost condensing those notes into one page. You know, we could easily have had 10 pages just on Caleb Williams. So that's actually what takes a lot of the time, is trying to word one sentence or word a paragraph.
Yeah.
And the number of paragraphs that have been written and rewritten and rewritten. But yeah, you're absolutely right. By the time you're kind of writing the 9th offensive tackle and you start to write it and you think, I'm sure I've just written this 2 days ago. It's difficult. And, you know, obviously some of that's because you're looking for the same things in players.
Yeah, exactly. And look, there's only so many traits, right? I mean, a guy's going to be fast or slow. He's going to have good game intelligence or not. He's going to have good ball handling skills or not. You know, particularly when you come to a sport. So I suppose, I don't know, do you feel yourself trying to weigh up, trying to convey the information in a no BS way? And then also trying not to be too convoluted with it, you know, because, I mean, surely it gets tiresome, because I've read many, many Goosebumps books, Peter, back in my day, R.L. Stein. And it was always my, you know, the first paragraph was all my sneakers thudded off the pavement. And then it's like, well, my shoes smacked off the floor, you know, and it seems like it's contrived, you know, he's just trying to come up with different ways to say the same thing. But
yeah, I think you're right. And I try not to. I guess I try and keep the level of detail, I'm not going to say high, but I don't want to delve down to, you know, and in this game, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, this happened. And, you know, it's knowing, I guess, that you've got a limited amount of space. You could go into the real depths of, you know, blocking skills or whatever it might be. But there's only so much that you can convey in that. And the more depth you go into in one area, the less space you've got for something else. And so, yeah, it's about finding that right balance. And also, I think, you know, just realizing that for somebody reading it, you're trying not to make it as, you know, it could be quite a bland subject, reading player after player profile. You know, I don't know how people read it. They may look at particular players or how they do it. So it could be quite a bland profile. So it's a bland read, if you like, when you're just reading one player after another. So trying to keep it at a reasonably high level so as not to make it more boring than it could already be.
Yeah, that is an interesting point, though. It's very hard to know how people consume things. And undoubtedly, the answer is you'll never know, because everyone will do it differently. You know, someone will say, right, I'm going to take Pete's wide receiver section, and I'm going to read it from top to bottom and see what players that I like. And if it piques my interest, I'm going to jump in. And maybe that's a good segue, Pete, into what's so good about this guide as well, is because when you zero in on a player, and you've did it with Jordan Love, and this is the famous one, right? And I've been meaning to go back through the draft guides, the last five, and pick out the ones that are just pure genius. But one of them was Jordan Love, where you put a box around it and said, one to watch, you know, like, keep an eye on this guy. He's a potential fit for the Packers. That leads to the question then, Pete, you know, do you feel like with Gutekunst, and we've had him now for a number of years and a number of drafts, that when you're pointing out that a player is good for the Packers, it's going to be based on two things, I guess, is it? Like, I mean, one, which is Gutekunst's type of player, and which does he go for? And there's certain measurables and certain positions for that. Now, he does break those rules, which probably makes your job even harder. And then the other one is, you know, we see Jeff Hafley come in, right? And we see this premium being put on the safety position. We see Xavier McKinney coming in as the veteran. We see Gutekunst coming out and saying, well, look, we're not going to go out and dip into the veteran market again. We're going to bring up a young guy to pair with McKinney. And you see defensive schemes changing, you know, going from a 3-4 to a 4-3 and a 4-3 to a 3-4 and dime defense. Like, there's so much to consider. So when you're putting those little boxes around players, Pete, what do you have to consider for you to make that edit?
I mean, you've pretty much described it. I mean, the first thing for me is, is it a player that I like, that I think I would like on my team? All right. And then, you know, is it a player that that you think would fit the team system?
Yeah.
So you're quite right about, you know, the Packers moving to a base 4-3 this season. Well, there are lots of edge players who are typically what we would call 3-4 outside linebacker edges, who are slightly smaller than, say, a Rashan Gary or a Preston Smith, but are probably not great fits for the Packers' new system. So it might be, you know, some of the best edge players in this draft are guys that you really like, but you don't really think they're fits for the Packers.
Mm.
So, for example, you know, Lucas Van Ness was a great fit for the Packers and is a great fit for the 4-3. But there'll be edge guys who are playing at, you know, 6'3", 240 pounds.
Yeah.
That just don't fit.
Yeah.
But they might be, you know, if you were going back to this brand new franchise, who are the players I would like, that guy would be a great fit for those, but he wouldn't necessarily be a fit for the Packers. And then, you know, you're taking other things into account. You're looking at athletic ability, you're looking at age, because you know that's a factor. But you also have to understand that the further down the draft you get, the less those factors become a factor. You know, and I guess the other thing for me is, you know, you're looking at where did those guys go to school and who did they play against? Right, because that's always a factor. You know, you've got guys that are in the SEC or the Big Ten, you know, they're playing big games every week. So coming into the NFL isn't as huge a leap for those guys as it would be for somebody perhaps at a different school.
Look, and this is the thing, is that and unless we delved into this, and again, Pete, I could keep you here on the bloody podcast, right, and you'd never get the draft guide finished because I'd want to talk about how you're doing the draft guide, and then you say, well, Steve, I'm not because I'm on here talking to you about it. But, like, there's so much nuance that goes into it. It's incredible. And to your point, like, Cooper Kupp, I mean, wasn't he a player that they said, we don't know if he can make it on the top level because he's not really playing teams and, you know, and then they go to all these bowl games and all that. Look, but again, I could keep you here all day. So two last things. This is your sixth guide now. And again, it would have started from your love of it and you're keeping the notes and you have a personal interest in it. You released this draft guide. People were blown away by it and they have been blown away, you know, each and every year. It's got more and more readers every year. This is your sixth version now. I mean, you know, do you feel the pressure of that, Pete? Do you feel the pressure mounting a bit? Not to put it on you, but do you feel the pressure mounting a bit more, you know, with every draft guide that you come out with the readership getting bigger and bigger and bigger? Do you feel any extra pressure there, or are you actually still enjoying the process and sparking that debate?
I love the process. The pressure is probably just the pressure I put on myself.
Yeah.
I'm comfortable with the process, but it's more about, you know, just thinking back at, you know, last year's draft guide, could this be slightly different? Could that be slightly different? You know, could we have more graphics? Could we have more of this? Could we have less of this?
Yeah.
You know, and there's questions that I ask myself, as I said earlier, you know, Caleb Williams, almost certainly the overall number one pick. I could have written pages and pages and pages about Caleb Williams, right? And I do ask myself, well, should I have written pages and pages and pages about him? It's a constant looking back and looking at the process and trying to refine it. The feedback that we get is great. And I appreciate all of the feedback and all of the kind words. It's
Yeah, keep them coming. I will say that to people, though. You know, keep it coming, Pete, because, I mean, the work that you put into this is phenomenal. And, you know, there's so many people reading this thing, and I've been guilty of it. You know, I'd listen to a podcast or I'd read a book or whatever, and you never sort of realize that you should really reach out to that person. You'll never say it, but I think that those comments are really nice to get, aren't they, Pete? You know, when you do something and someone's enjoying it, and just to get the feedback as to what they enjoy.
I think that's the main thing, you know. And I think that, you know, with something like this, you know, people are always going to differ on their views about individual players, right? And that's absolutely fine. And everybody's view is just as valid as anybody else's, you know. If we were perfect at this, we'd be working for NFL teams. And
you should be.
And
you know. Should be peace.
But, you know, like I say, everybody's view on individual players and stuff is just as valid as anybody else's. And you know, time tells that we got this player wrong and this player right, and kind of this player a bit right and a bit wrong. You know, that's exactly how the thing works. But you know, more around the structure, and they'd like to see more of this or less of this. You know, we include things like, you know, for those individual player profiles, we include, you know, their honors, for example. You know, the guy was all SEC in 2023 and he was a first team All-American in 2022.
Yeah.
Actually, that may not interest people. And if it doesn't, that's all, you know, that kind of thing is stuff that we could pull out.
Yeah.
And leave more space for something else. So that kind of feedback would be fantastic. But yeah, I mean,
again, that's all good. You know, it's all going to be good, yeah. Peter. But look, I mean, I'd have you on here for 40 minutes already, Peter. It's just like talking about the mechanics of the bloody draft guide. Just incredible. But look, I mean, if they think the draft guide is good, we're going to supplement that as we always do with our podcast, Pete. So let's give people the timeline. So we have the draft guide on the 11th of April. And then we usually hit it with an offensive podcast one weekend. Sorry, my dog's barking in the background. That's her, like, you know, in the Oscars where they played the music off. That's her now. So there's offensive podcast. Then the following week we do a defensive podcast. And again, we've Andy Davies on. And Andy Davies, you know, does great work around the draft and delving into it and giving his views as well. And I love hearing the two of you guys going back and forward. It's amazing. And then just on a couple of days before the draft, MP, we have yourself and Andy on again just to talk about special teams. There doesn't be a lot to talk about. And then kind of, I like this part, and this is the gossip sort of in me, is I love looking at sort of, you know, the surprises, not surprises, maybe mad things that could happen on draft night. And then after that, then we'll pull you back on and run through all of the draft picks and stuff like that as well. So there's an awful lot to come with this draft guide. And again, I know people love the podcast when you're on it, Pete. And this particularly is people's absolute favorite time of year, because it's so nice to hear you come on and be able to recall the 757th player from memory and talk about his honours and how good he is and all that kind of stuff. So it's truly going to be exciting. But the final question, Pete, on a scale of 1 to 100%, how much of the draft guide is done?
Oh, it's 99% done.
Good. There's still a few 4 a.m. finishes, no doubt. Changing fonts and changing positions around and stuff like that. But look, Peter, you're a hero. This draft guide is, honestly, it leaves me speechless every single year. I want to give you a massive thanks. You know, as being part of UK Packers, it's just incredible to have you, and sort of, you know, for the Packers community at large. We better let you go back down into the basement and, you know, turn on the dodgy flickering lamp and keep at it with this draft guide. But, yeah, a well-deserved rest then after. But just don't ease up yet, Pete, will you? I mean, let's get this thing to 100%, and then you can sleep for 4 days.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to keep going. We're not going to fumble 3 inches short of the goal line.
Peter, we'll talk to you in about a week, and your draft guide will come out, and there'll be loads of fanfare. And do get ready for all of the draft questions that are coming your way and mock drafts and stuff like that. I'm not going to discourage people from sending them, because I think it's really funny when you get your 77th mock draft to say, hey, Pete, what do you think of this? I think it's great, and you're always such a nice guy. If it was me, I'd just delete my profile. It's not for you. But look, Peter, at the IT Hedgehog, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you in a couple of days.
Go Pack, go.